just as some historical background, the First Congregational Church on Cortlandt Street, downtown Atlanta, it's one of the oldest churches in Atlanta, is it not?
It's one of the oldest African-American churches in Atlanta. That's absolutely right. It was formed in 1867, and it actually started not as a church, but as a school for ex-slaves at the Storrs School. And once the former slaves received religious instruction, they and the white missionaries who had instructed them decided to form a congregation. And so shortly after the Civil War, these newly freed slaves and missionaries, many from New England, formed this integrated congregation in 1867.
And the church itself, although the building has changed, it's still on the same site on Cortlandt Street as originally.
It is. There was an earlier building in 1880, I think, called the Little Red Church, which adjoined the present site. But the present building was built in 1908 under the auspices of the Reverend Henry Hugh Proctor. And it's a wonderful story. Proctor was a good friend of Booker T. Washington's. And so Booker T. came and gave the groundbreaking speech for that new building that we're presently in. And we've just restored that building after 100-plus years. We finally restored it and added on to it. And it's a wonderful facility.
Henry Hugh Proctor, a tremendous force in the African-American community in the years following the Civil War, early 20th century in Atlanta. Pastor of First Congregational Church downtown. It was his idea to come up with the Atlanta Music Festival, which didn't go by that name in those days.
That's right. It went by the All-Colored Music Festival of Atlanta when it first began. He's an interesting person because he really represents, I think, the evolving African-American community. He was educated at Fisk and then went on to the Yale Divinity School and then came to pastor First Congregational Church. He was the first black pastor of that church before it had only had white missionary pastors. And so he really represented Negro progress, as they spoke of, because of his education and his interest. And I think because of his facility with many different communities, he was also very, very important in the reconciliation efforts after the race riot of 1906. So he really is a part of that burgeoning new black middle class, if you will, people who are educated and want to find their way in this new South.
The All-Colored Music Festival, I think the first was in 1910.
It started in part because the members of First Congregational Church, many of whom themselves were educated at many of the black schools, Fisk, Dillard, Tuskegee, Strait College, Talladega, they wanted to go and hear the Metropolitan Opera, which was on tour here in Atlanta. And because in those days, of course, segregation, they were denied admittance. And they decided to actually start their own festival as a way to demonstrate not only their interest in classical music or concert music, but also they used it as an opportunity to present some of the wonderful black artists who were beginning to emerge, people like Roland Hayes and Harry T. Burley, who had already distinguished themselves as composers and performers all around the country. So they kind of became a hub for national artists coming to Atlanta. And it was an inclusive audience. So they invited white folks and black folks to come and experience it.
That effort at racial harmony on the part of Reverend Proctor at that time in Atlanta, I've got to think, would be a risky move. There were many people who had no intention of having the races commingle in any setting.
That's right.
What was the reaction to that?
Well, I think it was mixed. You have to remember that Atlanta was a complicated community. This is my perspective, not being a native Atlantan, but being a historian of kind of black and white relations. And so race is always an issue in the South and in the North, but especially in Atlanta, where in many ways people regarded Atlanta as a place where if anything is possible in terms of racial progress, it would be Atlanta. One, because of the large number of African Americans who are educated and skilled, and because of the hub of the black schools that had already started and were starting to flourish. And so in many ways, I think people hoped to see what was possible by looking at Atlanta, its institutions, some of its very successful businessmen and women. Someone like Alonzo Herndon, who headed the Atlanta Life Insurance Company, one of the first black millionaires, happened to also be a member of First Congregational Church. So in a sense, you have this beginning of a black I won't call it a black bourgeoisie, but certainly that's the case. And so on one level, it was risky. But on another level, this was the community that could be in conversation with the white businessmen and power brokers of Atlanta. And so I think you get a sense very early on that Atlanta would broker its progress, and it would not be a public conversation, but rather a private conversation. And Proctor was one of those civic leaders and religious leaders that was able to talk not only to black constituents, but to white constituents. And so they formed these alliances, if you will. And that's been a part of the character of Atlanta, if you think about it.
I had read that Reverend Proctor had in his church, First Congregational, a water fountain.
Yes.
That was not restricted to anyone, white, black, or otherwise.
That's right. The historic Connolly Fountain, which was installed, I think, in 1909, 1910. And it was the first public drinking fountain for coloreds in Atlanta. And there was a kind of hand-dressed sign that said, "Cool water, help yourself." And so we use that beautiful picture and that image. We have a wonderful photograph of these black children who many of them don't even have shoes on. But you can see the way in which that fountain represented the kind of oasis of clean water refreshment, which has always been my metaphor for the kind of work that we want to do at First Church. We want to try to be a haven, if you will, a sanctuary, an oasis.
Proctor graduated from Yale Divinity School.
Just like me.
As you did.
That's right.
That's just not a coincidence, is it?
Well, it is and it isn't. Many black congregationalists went to Yale Divinity School. Yale has had a very, very long history of educating black congregationalists. And so in that sense, because I was raised congregational in the Midwest, it wasn't that atypical to go to Yale. But certainly there's a long history of educated clergy who have gone to places like Yale and Harvard early on because they were one of the few places to admit students into the seminary.
So what prompted you to resurrect the All-Colored Music Festival a few years ago? I guess it was in 2001, your first?
Yes, yeah. Well, I think it's kind of complicated. I think because I, like Proctor, love music. And Proctor was actually quite a good singer, I understand. He actually raised money for the new building by singing up in New England, little churches in Bridgeport and New Haven to raise money. But I think in part because we both had a fondness for music and the power of music to bring people together, I think he recognized it, and I certainly have in my career recognized that music and the arts is a wonderful way to help us to discover things about ourselves through the arts. So that was in part the reason for the reconnecting to the Atlanta Music Festival idea. The other part was my relationship with Meridian Herald and my colleague Steve Darcy. He was a student also at Yale when we were both graduate students at the same time. And Steve and I had been working on different concerts here in Atlanta for about 15 years. And we decided that we keep bringing these highly integrated, inclusive communities together for these concerts. Why don't we connect that to the idea of the Atlanta Music Festival? And so that's what we did. Some of our programming actually helped us to discover our commonalities that we weren't aware of. Meridian Herald does wonderful music that reminds us of our American folk heritage. And so we did a couple of programs about religious and spiritual music, white and black spirituals, for example. And we discovered there was so much common terrain. This could really be a great lesson for all of us.
Well, let's talk about this year's festival.
Yes.
Which runs through Saturday with virtually all events and performances at Emory.
That's right.
Most all of them. A very impressive lineup of participants and performers, including the opera star, Miss Mitchell.
Yes, Laquita Mitchell, wonderful singer and wonderful artist. And we've been thrilled to have these wonderful national talents come and lead us in these performances. And so we're looking forward to Laquita. Also, Timothy Miller, who many people know here because of his wonderful work not only on the stage but also at the stadium. He's the guy that sings the anthem.
Yep.
And it's just a wonderful voice and spirit. Along with the Morehouse Glee Club, Meridian Chorale, the First Church Chancel Choir, and the Vegas String Quartet. So it's a pretty diverse and kind of wonderful expression.
The Chancel Choir from First Congregational.
Yes.
Will you be singing with them?
I will not because I'm a terrible singer, ironically. But I also know it, so I will not be singing. But I will give a couple of welcome remarks at the very, very opening. But we think that this is a wonderful opportunity to kind of show the breadth of African-American musical expression. Many people don't connect the spirituals now with the heritage of slavery and in some ways the resilience of our forebears. And so now to celebrate this music on a concert stage at Emory University, I think is its own sign of progress, if you will.
And Miss Mitchell is also involved in reaching out to some students, I understand?
That's right. She's going to actually do a few things for us. She's going to provide master classes to students of concert music, to singers. She's also going to meet with some guinea pigs of ours who are fourth to sixth graders. We started a conservatory music camp this summer with fourth graders from around Atlanta. And she's going to do a kind of workshop with them, explain what it means to be an opera singer. And they're going to show her what they've learned over the first few months of learning how to play an instrument. And we think it's going to be a fantastic engagement. My experience has been from my days as a child that if you can capture a child's interests and passion early on, it can really be a lifesaver. And that was certainly the case for me. So we're trying to replicate that.
With this week's festival, you'll have 13 years under your belt.
Yes.
When do you see this event 5 years from now? Whom do you still need to reach that you haven't reached yet?
That's a very good question. I think in 5 years, we hope to develop all of the ancillary programming that needs to kind of encircle this performance. So it's not simply a performance, but we're really trying to change the whole ecology of American music and concert music especially. So it means you have to not only provide opportunities for artists, but you have to develop audiences, which is not terribly glamorous work when they're in the third and fourth grade, but that's where it starts. And I think we have to continue to reach out to different tentacles within the community to get people to see their own participation in it. It's kind of like building an audience for a symphony orchestra, for an opera company. I think if it's a part of your life and a part of your experience, then it's nothing special to invest in and to be a part of. And so we're trying to create that kind of conversion experience, if you will.
If folks want more information on what's going on, best way to get it?
I think it's atlantamusicfestival.org. I think we have a link. And also Meridian Herald. You can go online and find out all of the information. And also arts@emory.org. You can find information for that as well. It's going to be a very exciting program. And one small feature that I want to make sure everyone is aware of is a conversation with T.J. Anderson, the famous composer who now lives in Atlanta. And many regard him as the dean of African-American composers. And so he's going to give a composer's conversation with me on Saturday at the Oxford Building at Emory. And we're going to talk about what it means to be an African-American composer in the 21st century. What are the issues, opportunities, challenges? And TJ has a unique experience to be able to share with us.
Dr. Dwight Andrews, Senior Minister of First Congregational Church, Professor of Music at Emory University. Dr. Andrews, a pleasure. Thank you.
It is my pleasure. Thanks for the time.